Good afternoon once again, and welcome to day four, the penultimate session of our Technology Outlook Week. If you've been enjoying all or most of this week's sessions, thanks for sticking with us. And if you're joining us for the first time today, welcome to the Pleasure Dome. Just to recap the Technology Outlook Week, on Monday, Elizabeth Gooding gave a thorough rundown of production inkjet systems. On Tuesday, Pat McGrew provided a pretty much encyclopedic look at software and workflow solutions. And yesterday, David Dwayne took a deep dive into packaging transformation. And archives of all three sessions, audio and slides, can be downloaded at whatthethink.com/webinars. Today's session, sponsored by SEI Laser, looks at wide format signage, textiles, and apparel. I'm excited by things. Welcome, Barry. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being had. No. First, just a few of our usual housekeeping items. If you've been listening all week, you should probably know these by heart, and you can play along with me. It's sort of like PowerPoint karaoke. We will be answering your questions during this 30-minute session. The Q&A box is at the bottom of your screen. Feel free to ask a question, and as always, we will either respond as soon as it is asked or hold it until the Q&A section at the end of this presentation. In this case, it will depend upon my ability to multitask, which is always kind of dodgy the best of times. Also, please just type your question in the box rather than raising your hand, unless you have to use the restroom. Out of respect for everyone's time, we try to keep these sessions to no more than 45 minutes. So any questions we don't get to in that time will be answered offline and posted on the What They Think Technology Outlook page for this topic. This session is also being recorded, and you will be able to download today's presentation, slides, and audio, which should be up on the webinar archive by the end of business today. Today's session is sponsored by SEI Laser, manufacturer of the fastest wide format laser cutting and marking system. SEI Laser Systems offers maximum flexibility for new profit opportunities and can perform such operations as cutting, kiss cutting, engraving, and dot etching for such diverse applications as signage, POP displays, LED backlit displays, and cosmetics packaging and display cases. SEI Laser Systems are compatible with multiple substrates and materials and can handle sizes up to 126 by 60 inches and come in a wide range of configurations. Request a sample kit and check out a live video demo at www.matic.com/wide. And we thank SEI Laser for helping us bring this session to you today. So let's get the session off the ground. Quite early, or perhaps not. So a few weeks ago, I received a press release from a company called SNA Displays. They're a manufacturer of LED sign systems. And I've written about them a few times in the past. And they had just completed a major installation at the Albany Airport here in upstate New York. That's my home airport. And since I usually fly Southwest, when I saw this image that they had accompanied the press release, I was a little nostalgic for the old days, you know, February. So someday I hope to see this signage in person. So be looking forward to that one of these days. Now I bring up LED displays, and we'll start with this session with trends in signage, because LEDs are starting to proliferate, and even in many cases replace LED-based displays for dynamic digital signage. You know, these are applications that we've been seeing proliferate over the past 5 or 6 years in all sorts of venues, from hotel lobbies and bank lobbies, even to restaurants and bars. They put their menus on electronic displays so they can change items dynamically. And of course, you know, in airports. And LEDs are starting to replace those older LCD displays. And for the usual reasons of, you know, cost coming down, finer LED bulb pitches that essentially boost the resolution of the display, just the greater ability to display dynamic content and animation and video. In most other respects, from a content creation and media management standpoint, LCD and LED dynamic signage functions more or less the same. So another interesting development in digital signage that I heard about earlier this year is, if you remember the electrophoretic e-ink technology that had been used in the early Amazon Kindle e-reader, that can now be used for digital signage. It's in color and it's at a much larger size. ACEP, it's called, Advanced Color E-Paper, can display millions of colors and with very low power consumption. You know, if you remember the original Kindle, they really only used power when you turned the page, or in this case, changed the image. So you can have smart posters that are reflective like print, are completely programmable, and use very low energy. We'll see how that develops in the next year or so. And just one other emerging trend in signage before we turn it over to wide format printing, basically is 3D printed signage, specifically using 3D printers from the likes of Massivit and now Mamaki and in others to print things like channel letters. I mean, channel letters are probably the most common form of signage, usually done with routers or even just hand carved or handmade. Now you can use 3D printers to generate channel letters. And since the Massivit technology and some of the Mamaki ones create sort of hollow shapes, you can light them from within, you can paint them and create all sorts of interesting lighting effects with them. So that's another interesting development in signage. Looking forward to seeing how that develops. So in terms of wide format printing, where have we been? And I want to mention at the outset that IDC's Tim Green and I did a lunch and learn session dedicated to wide format back in January. So I'm not going to repeat too much of what we said back then. This is going to be more of a technology and product session rather than market research and trends and things like that. So if you want to check out that previous webinar, there's a link. You can download that slide and audio archive. We went through a little bit of the history of wide format. I'm not going to go through all of this here, but just suffice to say, wide format has been around for a while, and it was around 2012 that we really started to see what I've been calling a printing industry diaspora, as the volume of general commercial print declined over the course of the 2010s. You know, commercial printers and other kinds of displaced businesses, photo labs, for example, moved into the specialty printing niches, specifically wide format. And as my erstwhile co-author, Dr. Joe Webb, once said, the wide format market is like Florida. Everyone is from somewhere else. So where we are now, though, is that printing industry diaspora or migration into wide format has largely ended. Last November, if you remember last November, we had conducted our annual print business outlook survey. And we asked a number of questions about business conditions and challenges and investments, and also the extent to which print businesses are or have been or are going to add new capabilities like wide format. And as you can see here, when it comes to wide format printing capabilities, nearly one half, 45% of our survey respondents say they've already added them, and 28% of them more than 2 years ago, 17% more than a year and a half ago. Only 8% plan to add wide format printing in the next year or two, and 30% have no plans to add wide format capabilities at all, which suggests that anyone who planned to move into wide format printing has largely already done so. There may be a few stragglers, and that 30% probably doesn't comprise hardcore stalwart holdouts, but generally the big shift to wide format is pretty much over. So what does that mean for wide format printing as an opportunity for print businesses? Is it a moribund print area? Is it worth getting into? Are shops better advised to look for other areas or play the lottery or whatever? No, not at all, or at least not necessarily. Competition in wide format printing services has become tougher, and there are many wide format printing applications that have become, that dreaded word, commoditized, posters, banners, etc. And probably if you're one of the early adopters of wide format, you may have been thinking all this time, well, there goes the neighborhood, as all these upstarts started muscling in on your territory. And I can sympathize, but that's what happens in a market. But that all said, competition and commoditization shouldn't be discouraging. If anything, they should be encouraging, as they indicate that there's a growing demand for wide format print applications. The number of establishments in a market producing something in any market, be it printing or not, is a function of the level of demand for what those establishments produce. So the more establishments there are, the healthier the market. And yes, while there are certain wide format applications that are more commoditized than others, many remain fairly high margin. And at the same time, I've spoken to several wide format shops that still make a killing doing banners. So there's a lot of demand for them, and their production can be highly automated and efficient. So there's still a lot of business to be had, even if the competition's gotten a bit more fierce. So what are some of the general market drivers carrying us into the 2020s and beyond? Well, first of all, as I said, the demand for wide form print applications remains high. It takes a crowd to draw a crowd. Sign and display graphics are highly visible and conspicuous applications, and one business sees what the competition is doing and feels the need to follow suit or try to top it. Then, of course, there are rebranding cycles. As we all know, businesses in many verticals have a much more accelerated rebrand cycle than they used to. And that means they need replacement signage or vehicle graphics and other collateral materials, both big and small, on a more frequent basis. And of course, automation and ease of use have made wide format printing highly efficient. And while that has true helped facilitate that commoditization and all the competition, but it's also made wide format printing more profitable as turn times have been accelerated and errors have been reduced. So we've now reached the point where if you can print on virtually anything, and of course you need to append a million asterisks and footnotes to that statement. It's not always easy to print on a variety of things, and we could do an entire webinar on the challenges involved in printing on different materials. But wide format has come to encompass a wide variety of printed products beyond banners and posters and what we normally think of as wide format output. Think of things like floor graphics, window graphics, car wraps, wraps of all kinds. I did a story last month about a company in the UK that foil wrapped a boat, a luxury yacht. Try installing a wrap while floating on a raft in the river. It's kind of a bit of a challenge. Another company in the Southeast wrapped the Hilton Head Lighthouse. So you can pretty much wrap anything you want these days. And then there's also printing on three-dimensional objects, like golf balls and smartphone cases and other objects. And these may not be wide in the sense of dimension, but the same basic technology, and in many cases the same printers, can be used to print all of these items. And then, of course, there are textiles, certain applications of which, like soft signage, obviously overlap with wide format. As for apparel, well, all I'm going to say is, until my gym reopens, yes, at this point, apparel could very well be considered wide format. Now, it's hard, of course, to provide any kind of current technology outlook without talking about the elephant in the room, the current pandemic. In some ways, wide format and signage shops were in a slightly better position than general commercial printers, as even when there was still some debate over who was an essential business, sign producers were often classified as essential businesses early on in the crisis, especially since they served other essential businesses. Printing safety and CDC signage, wayfinding signage for medical centers and virus testing facilities, and social distancing signage and floor graphics, which still remains a hot area. One of the things that I find kind of amusing is that even today, we can see that some companies are using social distancing graphics as part of their advertising and marketing. The image on the left is a floor graphic in my local liquor store. I know St. Jameson and Smirnoff are sort of using the 6 feet apart graphics as sort of promotional materials. Now, the image on the right, that's also a floor graphic. I took that yesterday in my local supermarket. Now, I don't know what's happening where you guys are. But up here in upstate New York, the supermarkets have instituted not just social distancing, but also one-way aisle navigation. Sometimes people obey. But I have discovered that trying to find anything or get to anything is like driving in San Francisco with all the one-way streets. You sort of have to figure out how to spiral into the aisle that you need. And getting to the produce section was kind of like trying to get north of Market Street. But anyway, what I first thought when I saw the graphic on the right there was that it really reinforced a point I often make, is that as a wide format printer, you really need to understand the materials you're printing on, the environment they're going to be installed in, and what forces it's going to be subjected to. In this case, lots of foot traffic and shopping carts. And you can work with floor graphics providers and consumables creators to find a material that can withstand that kind of abuse. Now, I'm going to spend the next portion of this session, before I turn it over to Carrie, running through some recent product introductions in the wide format printing space. It's worth mentioning at the outset that given the maturity of wide format printing as a technology and as a market, new wide format products are largely evolutionary rather than revolutionary. There were improvements in speed, quality, and automation to some extent, and primarily vendors are fleshing out their product portfolios, adding an entry-level model here, a mid-range solution there, and so forth. Just trying to appeal to as many different types of print providers that are trying to get into the market as possible. And of course, improvement in inks are also helping expand the range of applications that can be produced. Now, there are so many manufacturers and so many models that there's no way to go over every single one of them and have this session not last 3 weeks. So this is not meant to be an exhaustive list. If somebody isn't included or a model is included, it's not a deliberate diss. It's just that there's only so much you can put on a slide. and I'm also just really intending to highlight some newer units that have hit the market in the past 6 months or so, and to showcase the wide variety of model types and technologies and the applications that they can produce. So first of all, Canon Solutions America launched the Ose Colorado series back in 2017 with the 1640, a 64-inch roll-to-roll wide format printer, which is based on a new ink technology they had developed called UV gel. And I'm not going to go into any real detail about how the gel-based ink works chemically or physically. I've written about that before. You can find that on What They Think. But the idea behind the printer basically was to find a way of printing first and then UV curing the ink later. And that's sort of the MO of the ink. And splitting those two processes really enabled the machine to print much faster than other kinds of UV roll-fed machines in that basic category. So last year, the next-gen UV gel ink was introduced in the Colorado 1650. The new formulation introduced the flex finish technology, a new approach to LED curing that lets the user choose between matte or gloss for each individual print, so they can apply different finishes, removing the need to change inks or media from print to print, which I thought was a cool idea. Back in January at EFI Connect, EFI launched a new mid-range roll-to-roll printer line, the 3.5-meter ViewTech D3R and the 5.2-meter D5R. They're both LED printers. These are designed to produce high-end signage, decor, outdoor graphics, and other applications. EFI hasn't officially announced this yet, but they won't break my legs if I mention it, or at least for that reason. The forthcoming EFI Pro 32R is a 3.2-meter wide-format roll-to-roll LED printer that's designed to be an economical all-in-one production-level printer. And we'll have more details about that once it is officially announced in the next couple of months. Now, Epson has been, over the past couple of years, heavily involved in dye sublimation with their SureColor F series, some really great machines in that series. This spring, though, they refreshed their SureColor T series of printers designed for technical printing, as well as the AEC market, the architecture, engineering, and construction, with a new model that is sort of a follow-up to one they had debuted a couple of years ago, which was a desktop wide-format technical printer. Sounds like a little bit of a contradiction in terms, but it printed 24 inches wide and could conceivably fit on a desk, not necessarily my desk, but presumably somebody's. It was designed for design office environments and was a little funkier and designer looking than these things tend to be, but they've complemented the original unit with the T2170, which is a little less expensive and a bit more on the entry-level side. And they have other new additions to the T series as well, the 24-inch SureColor T3575 and the 36-inch T5475, which are designed for much larger work groups. And they all use Epson's new high-capacity 700-milliliter ink cartridges. The most recent addition to Fujifilm's Acuity line is the 5-meter super-wide Acuity Ultra, which prints on a wide variety of materials with low-density UV-jet inks to produce applications as varied as billboards, backlit signage and displays, indoor displays, trade show graphics, POP signage, high-value graphic art, interior decor and wall coverings, which are really hot applications right now, outdoor displays, outdoor signage, and more. And there is also a 3.2-meter version available of the Acuity Ultra. Now, it's been something like, it must be close to a decade now or so since HP launched its LaTeX series of wide format printers, which have since been used to produce a bewildering variety of applications. A sweet spot early on, and continues to be a sweet spot, is soft signage, as well as vinyl graphics for vehicle wraps. And until the proliferation of digital dye sub in the recent years, LaTeX was probably the best option for printing on textiles for signage applications. Originally a roll-fed line of printers, 2 years ago, HP launched a version that supports rigid materials, sort of a flatbed machine. And this year has expanded the LaTeX R series, R for rigid, with the brand new entry-level 64-inch R1000, which complements the LaTeX R1000 Plus and the high productivity 98-inch LaTeX 2000 Plus. And HP now offers white ink for the LaTeX line, which is sort of a glaring omission, sort of technical, physical and chemical reasons for that was problematic, but they've cracked that nut. And now there's a white ink, which is a highly desired feature for the LaTeX for many years. Now, benchtop printers are a growing category. Now, these are UV jet machines designed to print on three-dimensional objects, such as for short-run promotional items, like golf balls, smartphone cases, that sort of thing. Indeed, LogoJet had originally been founded to develop a machine for printing on golf balls. They have since expanded beyond that. It was a decidedly niche application. And the newest product launched this year is the UVX40R Plus, which is an enhanced edition of the previous unit, a tabletop UV flatbed printer that features a longer print bed to accommodate larger media or object sizes or more objects. You know, it's 18 by 24 inches, which is 33% more print area than the earlier model. And that's going to be a common theme in this class of equipment is larger bed sizes to print on larger larger objects or print more objects at a single time. Now, Milwaukee has models in virtually all classes of wide format printing equipment, from solvent to flatbed UV, to benchtop UV, to 3D printing, to fabrics, which Carrie will discuss shortly. They even have a latex unit. This year, their most recent product introduction was the 1.6 meter UJV100-160 rollable UV LED printer, which is sort of designed to be an economical option, both in terms of the hardware and the consumables. So that's a new from Milwaukee. They also have a BOFA air purifier for a solvent unit. One of the big problems of solvent ink printing is that the fumes from the VOCs can have to be properly ventilated, and even then they can be kind of overpowering. So that's an interesting option for those machines. Another interesting development with Mamaki is they've teamed up with Oki to take charge of the Oki Color Painter line of wide format printers. I've got a colleague who just loves the Oki wide format printers. So it'll be interesting to see where Mamaki takes that line. So I think it's a pretty interesting product category. Last year, Ricoh was showing off its recent UV flatbed printers. And at various trade events, if you remember trade events, they've been showing how they can be used for sort of more industrial printing applications. One show they were printing on cinder blocks. They've had beta testers and customers printing on furniture and other materials, you know, quite beyond, you know, paper or board. So they're showcasing some really unique applications beyond what we normally think of as wide format. They've also got a latex unit. And one interesting thing, at Printing United back in October, they were previewing, they didn't have this on the floor, but they did like a little animated model of it, with something like that can only be called direct-to-truck printing, a system in which there are large jets mounted on a scaffolding, and they print using a substance that's more akin to paint than ink. And they shoot it directly on the side of a truck or a plane or any other form of transportation, I guess. And I used to joke for years that someday someone would invent a drive-through printer for spray-on vehicle graphics. And that may actually be coming true. So I really can't wait for events to start up again, just so I can see if this is developed any further. Roland also has units in a wide variety of product categories. This year, the textiles, they are really big in. They've also got solvent machines and all sorts of cool stuff. This year, they're updating their flatbed UV lines. The new Versa UV LEF2-300D, gotta love these names, is a benchtop UV printer designed for direct printing and simulated embossing on three-dimensional items for promotional items, or what I call tchotchke printing. This new model is larger than previous units in the series, supporting a height of up to 7.87 inches, which is twice that of previous LEF2 models. Again, the common theme of these types of devices getting bigger. And last year, Roland launched the IU1000F high volume UV flatbed printer, which prints on 4x8 foot rigid boards, weighing up to 99 pounds. And if the earlier model in that series, when they introduced that a couple of years ago at an SGIA, they were using it to print on footballs. So you can print on some really unique items with these things. Now, this is by no means everyone and everything, but I hope that gives you a good sense of the breadth of machines that are available. And now Carrie will take us through textiles and apparel. Off you go, Carrie.
All right, thanks, Richard. So just a brief sort of overview of what's going on in the industry. An industry that was already under pressure due to sustainability issues. In fact, it's the world's second largest polluter after petroleum, which is saying a lot. But now, in addition to that problem, they've uncovered the fragility of the global supply chain, as we have all seen during the pandemic, with things having difficulty getting in and out of the Far East. You know, originally we took everything offshore so that we could take advantage of the lower labor rates, but, you know, labor rates have gone up and now it's hard to get get things even shipped, and the costs keep going up. One of the things that's happened that's helped to drive volume in digital textile printing is that new developments in inks, and especially the pigment inks, which a lot of the digital printing inks, you can only print to either to polyester, or it requires a lot of post-processing, washing, and so on, using a lot of water and taking a lot of time. With pigment inks, you can print direct to textile and eliminate a lot of steps in the process. And according to the latest data from WTIN, the World Textile Information Network, 6.9% of printed fabrics worldwide are printed digitally. And that's up from 6% last year, which is a big growth inside of that small, very small sliver. And there's a lot of opportunity to bring more fabrics to digital printing. The other thing that's helping growth in the digital, from the digital perspective, is automation. And there's been a lot of automation introduced across the entire spectrum of the workflow. And that's making both the producers and the brands more interested in reshoring and taking advantage of on-demand production and microfactories. The last mile, so to speak, of the automation issue is sewing. So if you're sewing something like pillows or something square, or even there was some automation being done to do jeans, so you're doing just one thing, there's some automation in sewing, but it still takes a lot of manual effort to produce that final sewn product. The other problem that we have there is that we're not really teaching sewing in the schools anymore. So the labor force is aging out on the sewists, the people that can do that skill. And there's a need to attract people, younger people to the industry to be able to get that labor. You know, what's going to happen when those people age out? We're used to seeing that in the commercial print industry as well. And also, as Richard was saying with the wide format printers, the digital textile printer manufacturers are continuing to add speed and functionality, and we'll talk about some of that. So we're going to, again, like Richard said, we can't cover everybody, but we're going to hit some high points here. And so we'll start out with Durst. And they launched this digital production platform at FESPA 2019 in Munich. Seems like forever ago, but now, you know, they're adding additional products to the line, the 250HS, the 200HS, and they're operating in a variety of segments. So they're doing display graphics and signage printing. They're printing on corrugated, packaging, industrial printing, and also textiles. And they've done a lot with building an integrated workflow as well to make it much more productive for the operators. Well, they were looking to introduce pigment-based textile printing at FESPA 2020, but that's been postponed until February, so we'll see what happens there. And again, Epson, you know, has been doing a lot, well, for a long time with both dye sublimation and direct-to-garment. Now they have an industrial-strength direct-to-garment unit that's SureColor F3070. And it can print on a wide variety of fabrics, including cotton, linen, and rayon. About 60% of printed apparel is polyester, but that leaves 40% with the natural fibers, and there's more demand for natural fibers these days. They can print one full-size shirt in about a minute. That's pretty good. Cornate's been really active. They introduced their Vulcan Plus. It's a direct-to-garment mass customization device that they introduced in January. And they can produce more than 2,000 impressions in a 12-hour shift, so that's pretty good. Also, the Storm HD6 Lite, that one is designed to make it easier for smaller businesses to get into direct-to-garment printing. And for commercial printers who want to move into that market or augment, you know, with selling t-shirts or whatever, or even for sign and display graphics printers that want to add direct to garment, this is an interesting solution. And then most recently, they introduced their Robusto softener. And One of the issues with some of the pigment inks, and I especially noticed this on Cornite when I was at FESPA and they were handing out samples, is it feels really plasticky. And so what the softener does, it's in line in the printer and it, in the Presto printer, and it actually softens the fabric and gets rid of a lot of that plasticky feel. And it also at the same time improves and intensifies the color, and there's no impact on the light passes. So it's a very interesting solution. Our European expert on textiles, Debbie McKeegan, has actually had the opportunity to test out this product and feel how it is. And she and I have a lot of respect for her opinions, and she says it's as advertised. Mamaki actually has such a broad product line, as Richard has been saying. This is a really interesting product, the TX300P 1800. And I always thought that was Mark II, but I was told it's Make II. So I guess it's version II. Product names are interesting in this market. But this one printer can use two different ink sets. It can use a blend of either pigment and dye sublimation, pigment and direct sublimation, or you could do dye sublimation to paper and dye sublimation to direct. And the benefit of that is that by just changing out a panel on the bottom of the printer below where the fabric goes, you can actually switch quickly between inks. Normally you would have to either completely flush out a system, which most people don't want to do, or you would need to have two separate printers to produce the different kinds of products. That you could also get this printer with these other, as a dedicated printer using reactive acid pigment, et cetera. You could have it dedicated, but the dual ink configuration is a real innovation on the part of Mamaki. And this is something that I wrote about earlier in the year. Nina Koldenhove out of Europe has brought to market a digital transfer paper called TexCall. And that normally with dye sublimation, heat transfer papers, you need to produce, you have to put it onto polyester or polyester blends. It doesn't work on natural fibers. So what they're trying to do is develop a transfer paper that works on natural fibers to take advantage of that 40% of apparel that's not polyester. To do it in a way that's a little bit more flexible. So with the digital transfer process, according to their early tests, you're using 33% less ink than direct to fabric. So that can be a huge benefit. Right now they're at version 1.0, and that's suitable for home decor or things that don't come into direct contact with your skin, because it's kind of like, the feel of it isn't quite right. But they are working very hard on TexCall 2.0, which they think will be suitable for apparel. And hopefully they'll have something in the third quarter to share on that, in that regard. And then on a very hopeful note, I just came across this morning. There's a lot of question about, what industries are going to recover and how they're going to do and all of that. And the Vogue editor, Anna Wintour, this is her perspective on what's going to happen with the industry. Now, during this stay at home thing, we've all been probably dressing a little more comfortably than usual, but her opinion is that people are going to have a pent up desire to dress up more and go out and look your best and all those things. So she really believes that we'll see the apparel industry rebound well after we get through this. So let's hope that's the case.
All right, thank you very much. Now we're running a little bit low on time, and we do want to leave time for your questions, but I do want to touch on finishing for wide format, because I think that's going to be the next major growth area for the market, the next big adventure for wide format and signage shops. We've already seen that the shops all over the place have been installing the printing equipment, and has been the case in general commercial printing. The last decade or so, I saw a wave of investment in binding and finishing, and I think that basic trend is going to repeat itself in wide format. as more businesses don't really have the time to outsource a lot of finishing, and they can also add a lot more value by having the equipment in-house themselves. Now, of course, the most basic finishing process, as it is with commercial printing, is cutting. In the case of wide format, that's either with a roll-fed XY cutter for paper, vinyl, other soft materials, or a large cutting table, which can vastly improve productivity and expand applications, such as detailed contour cutting. And these tables are a better alternative than employee with an X-Acto knife, which is how a lot of contour cutting applications have been, and some still are produced. And of course, other finishing processes include laminating, mounting, grommeting, sewing, and welding in the case of textiles, and so on and so forth. Improvements to cutting tables boost both speed and automation. More and more tables feature conveyor systems or even robotic arms that load and or offload printed boards. But tooling is largely where the action is on these tables. There are hundreds of swappable tools, such as, in addition to knives, things like routers, that sort of route or bore out board, plastic, wood, and other materials. And other tools that can mill, perforate, crease, engrave, and even create braille lettering. Which is important for wayfinding signage to be ADA compliant. And some tables can also automatically swap out the tooling based on parameters specified in the cut file, which is what controls the whole process. Finally, we do want to mention laser cutting, which is starting to become practical and affordable. Tables from the likes of Esko, Zund, Gerber MCT, and others offer laser modules that can be swapped in and out. And there are, of course, dedicated laser systems from the likes of our sponsor, SEI Laser, as well as Trotec, that can give you a lot more flexibility in terms of your finishing. Lasers can be used not only for cutting, but also for engraving, marking, etching, and so on. They can be ideal for soft signage and other polyester textile applications because they have the added benefit of sealing the edges of fabrics as they cut, since you're basically melting the plastic, so that saves a sewing step in that. And they can be compatible with a wide range of materials such as plastics, glass, wood, metals, leather, and even paper and cardboard. So those are starting to really come into their own. And now Carrie has a final case study for us.
Yeah, we just wanted to wrap this up with a story that I came across recently. Then, and I was, this is Maverick Concepts. They're a Dallas-based firm, and they don't consider themselves to be a printer, although they do produce printing. They consider themselves to be a creative design and fabrication company. And the reason that I was so interested in them was twofold. One is that they've created an extremely integrated environment. So, you know, they get a lot of work through the shop. They've chosen EFI as their ecosystem. They've got hybrid roll-to-roll flatbed printers, they've got die sub printers, and they also do thermoforming, which you don't see that often. It's a kind of a tricky thing to do because you have to allow for the stretch when you actually form that image. But thermoforming, if you've been to Las Vegas before all this happened, you'll see that most of the slot machines, for example, have thermoformed decorations on them. So, and they also have developed a unique process that allows them to transfer with die-sub to rigid substrates. And one example that he gave me was that they produced 5,000 pieces of rigid sublimated items for a national retailer that had 1,000 locations. And the one of the owners, Phil McNamara, indicated that he expects, once we've opened back up again, he expects to see a lot more of that. And a lot of this goes back again to the supply chain issues. So it's just gonna be a lot easier for these companies to have things produced domestically and have them produced on demand. The other thing, the final step that he needs to do to integrate the whole process is with the MIS system, and they'll go live with their new MIS system on July 1. So it's just a really interesting story of a company that that, you know, starts with the customers very early in the planning process. They're up way far upstream, so they get to help give them ideas on what is possible, and then they have a lot of possibilities to deliver. The owner, Phil McNamara, is the gentleman on the left in this image.
All right, thank you, Carrie. All right, that's our story, and we're sticking to it. So if anybody has any questions, get them in. We have a few minutes before we need to break. First question is, will you please elaborate on the word direct-to-truck printing? So this was a system that Rico was showing at Printing United back in October. And they didn't have a unit yet. It's a company they were acquiring, I think, based in Japan, where basically it's just this big scaffolding, and you've got these jets on the side, and you can print directly on the side of a truck or on the side of a plane or whatever you'd like. And it takes into account the contours of the corrugation that you often find on the sides of trucks. And it just seemed like a really interesting idea. I haven't actually seen it physically in action, but it just sounds like a really interesting idea. And I'm curious to see how that will actually develop.
And your comment about drive-through truck painting, I mean, that's perfect. Now we need drive-through airplane painting.
This is true. Let's see. Is there any company's digital devices which can be used in printed electronics? Oh, that's a good question. I do not know the answer to that.
The answer to that is yes. I'm not sure. I can't give you a, we can do some research on it, but it's a matter of what material they're going to be jetting. And so there are companies that are doing printed electronic with inkjet printers, direct to rigid more than direct to then roll the roll. And the other thing, when you're talking about printed electronics, if you take a look on what they think, I recently wrote an article about AFFOA and fiber computing. And so they're working with MIT, and they're working on ways to actually embed the computer inside the fiber. So that's a really exciting future printed electronics capability. Take a look at that article when you get a minute.
What are the advantages of laser compared to knife cutting? There are a couple. First of all, as I mentioned in the case of textiles, when you use a laser on polyester fabric, it seals the edges, so you don't have to sew up the edges to keep them from fraying. So that's an advantage there. And the systems are also really useful for not necessarily cutting, but sort of engraving. You can create some interesting designs, so you can do a lot more with them than you can with knives.
And also, you don't have to change out the tools.
Right. MGI has a product for direct printed electronics, we are told.
Yeah.
All right. It looks like that's the end of our question. Anybody have any further questions before we move on? If you have a question, please use the Q&A box rather than raising your hand, unless you need to use the restroom.
And then all right. just to restate again, Richard, where can I find the recording of this?
Right. For a recording, slides and audio, they'll be archived on the Technology Outlook webpage for this session. Just go to the What They Think homepage and click on the Technology Outlook link, and all the topics will be there, and you can find this session and all the other sessions in the links down there. Oh, can you tell us what the name of that article was on printed electronics direct print?
Printed electronics direct print. I was talking about fiber computing, which is a little bit different. And that if you search on A as in Apple, F as in Frank, O as in Octopus, I don't know, Alpha, A as in Alpha, you'll find that article on What They Think. And it's a forward-looking, but not that far out technology that will allow us to change the computer that you put in your pocket out for apparel, actually.
And Pete Bazelier has written a number of articles for us on printed electronics as well. So you can just find them on What They Think as well. Why was HP Stitch not mentioned in the DISA printer category?
Well, that was my bad, I guess. They've had it out for a while, and it wasn't particularly new, although it was just last year, I guess, that it was introduced. But yeah, that printer is a really nice printer, and it's been having a lot of success getting those installed. So it's well worth looking at if you're going to look at DISA.
Are you going to conduct a seminar on print media and other consumables for the wide format printer? It's not a bad idea someday. We don't have any plans at the moment, but that's certainly a topic we write about a lot. Maybe we will do one of these lunch and learns on that if there's enough requests. So we haven't discounted it, but it would be an interesting idea. Common applications for the sign maker.
They do everything. I mean, everything.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, they're all over the place. All right, any further questions before we start wrap this up and let everyone get on with their day? All right, we are in the final throes of Technology Outlook Week. Tomorrow, we wrap everything up with Trish Witkowski talking about finishing. So if you've not already registered for that session, please go to whatthethink.com/webinars. And next month, we'll be continuing our monthly Lunch and Learn series on June 24th at 1 p.m. Eastern. It's a Wednesday. We'll be going over the Printing News 100 Top Shops, which we just finished up. We're still trying to wrangle some guests for that, so stay tuned to What They Think for more information about that session. As I've been plugging all week, we have an updated special report. We have updated our original Printing Outlook 2020 report, which we had originally released back in January, which may have been the Pleistocene epoch. So we've updated it with new data on the impact of the COVID-19 crisis on both the industry and the economy at large. And so to get your copy, go to store.whatthethink.com. And it just remains for me to thank Carrie Sherburn for joining me today. Thanks to SEI Laser for sponsoring today's webinar. And thank you all for attending. Once again, stay safe.
Thanks, Richard.
And hopefully we'll see you all back here tomorrow.